the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3.
Ignition. We have one. Flame and a great deal of smoke coming out of the bottom of that rocket. 8.9 seconds will hold still. Now it's moving. It is.
Since the very beginning of mankind on this planet Earth, he has looked to the skies in a hope to find a purpose to his existence. Down through the ages, prophets and holy men have made claims of communications and visions from gods, or a god living somewhere in the universe. All through history, there have been reports of mysterious beings and objects, visitors from the skies. In recent years, there have been numerous reports of unidentified flying objects, not only in this country, but simultaneously all over the globe. It's a clear night, late in 1973. Four military men are aboard a helicopter on their way to Cleveland from Port Columbus Airport. They are halfway to their destination. It's about 11 p.m. Suddenly, the crew chief, Sergeant Robert Yenisek, notices a small red light on the horizon. About 40 seconds later, Major Larry Coyne, the Army helicopter pilot, sees the light approaching his aircraft. He radios for ground confirmation.
Roger, unidentified aircraft flying in excess of 600 knots, approaching from 180 degrees to 90 degrees to our position. Over.
Negative, this is ground control.
Major, no aircraft in your vicinity flying at excess of 600 knots and 3,000 feet over.
We're getting a bright red light, a green light, and a white light.
It's continuing a collision course. It looks like a gray metallic object.
At that point, Coyne ducked his head and raised an arm in front of his face, braced for impact, and pushed the stick down. They started to descend. The object moved over them, and from a high speed it stopped and moved slowly. The helicopter continued descending to 2,700 feet. The major looked down at his altimeter. Only seconds had passed. The pilot of that helicopter had his aircraft in a controlled auto-rotative descent, but when the object was over them, it was pulled up toward the unidentified object, which made no noise, nor were there any air turbulences. Further description of the object indicated that it had a green light that lit up the whole cockpit and all of the dials with a bright green glow. The light had a pyramid shape to it. The four men saw the object distinctly because the stars were behind them. It was dark, and they could actually see the outline. They saw the port side, and other than the cockpit, there were no windows from that position. At that time, all four men had been connected with aviation for a minimum of 7 years and knew aircraft from PT-19s up to C-5As. Another witness saw the entire incident from the ground. This case is presently being investigated at Fort Rucker, Alabama, by the U.S. Army Aviation Safety Board, and is one of hundreds reported daily around the world on unidentified flying objects.
Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth.
This is Apollo Control, Houston. Apollo 11 still passing around the far side of the moon.
It seems to be the general hypothesis, meaning unproven belief or theory, of most scientists that not only does extraterrestrial life exist, but that we have been visited on numerous occasions by humanoids or beings from space as part of an observation of some kind. We would now accept that a good working hypothesis is that the Earth is being visited by extraterrestrial spacecraft. It was a hypothesis that was first advanced by the Air Force itself in a secret memo published about June of 1948, which is only 3 pages long. It was the estimate of the situation by the Air Force technical people at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that they were dealing with extraterrestrial spacecraft. And that report went on up to General Hoyt Vandenberg, who was chief of the Army Air Forces at that time. And he said it was impossible. And from that time onward, it did become impossible as far as the Air Force was concerned.
Liberty Command to Internal.
The Pentagon first became actively involved in the late 1940s when they were flooded with reports about lights seen in the sky and unexplained objects sighted by military men and people of high credibility. The Air Force Project SIGN investigated with the attitude that there had to be a logical explanation, maybe foreign weapons being tested here by other governments. The conclusion of Project SIGN was that the phenomenon clearly showed to be no threat to national security. There was not enough proof, so the extraterrestrial visitation idea was dropped, at least for the time being. The project was later reorganized under Project Grudge, which essentially attempted to bat down in every possible way the credibility of anyone who reported seeing a UFO. 2 years later, they became somewhat more enlightened and upgraded the project to Project Blue Book, where they tried to get some real answers to some questions. It's now 26 years later. The Air Force has generally and stoutly maintained that they are no longer investigating, except when it is brought to their attention, and that they have no evidence that UFOs really exist. We are of the opinion that they have lots of evidence, and there is lots of evidence that they don't say anything about, because it leaks out all of the time by people who have worked for the Air Force and the Army. And they will come right out and say how the Air Force has actually sent up planes to photograph UFOs and got pictures of them. There are many radar sightings and reports that are known internally to the Air Force that never even got to Project Blue Book. I talked with Dr. Philip Seff, who has lectured at Moorhead Planetarium at the University of North Carolina. He was also a research geologist and technical advisor to the Air Force Space and Missile Program. While an associate professor of geology at the University of Redlands, Dr. Seff was associated with the Condon Committee, a special government committee that investigated UFO sightings in Redlands in 1968.
Well, in the late 60s, I was with the professor of geology at the University of Redlands, and at that time the Air Force had established the famous Condon Committee at the University of Colorado, which was called the University of Colorado Air Force Investigation of UFOs. And they had established what they called the Early Warning Network, in which I was appointed represent them in this part of the country here. And at that time, a UFO came over Redmond, so we established a committee at the university, a team of scientists, and we investigated it. And we interviewed close to 100 people that had actually seen it. As a matter of fact, one of the committee was a professor of art, and he reconstructed the thing, made a painting of it based on the witness interpretation. And it was, according to the witnesses, it was supposed to be quite accurate.
Was there ever any evidence as to the existence of a spacecraft or beings of an extraterrestrial origin?
Well, there is a tendency to lean towards that explanation or hypothesis among scientists nowadays, because we can't explain these things away by any natural phenomena. And although it's certainly far from proven, there is a tendency to lean towards an extraterrestrial hypothesis for the origin of some UFOs. I tend to lean towards the extraterrestrial hypothesis myself, because I've been involved in investigating these things for a great number of years, and I just can't explain this phenomena by natural means. But there are always these outlandish things, like they thoroughly investigated that so-called landing at Pascagoula, Mississippi last year, and have a big file on it, and they have files on other occurrences which are similar to Pascagoula.
Of those two guys that were picked up, and what information was revealed?
Well, I don't know the whole story. I know that two of them were fishing one evening, and this craft landed near them, and some so-called people, humanoids, came out of it, and one of the people, one of the two men passed out, so he doesn't remember anything, but they were both taken aboard this thing and given some type of examination and then released. That's the gist of the story, according to Dr. Jim Harder, who investigated it. These two people were hypnotized by Dr. Harder from UC Berkeley, and both told the same story very convincingly. As a matter of fact, they were, one of them was given a lie detector test, polygraph test, which showed that he was telling the truth. I've talked to Dr. Hynek, who is chairman of the Department of Astronomy at Northwestern University, who was the consultant for Project Blue Book for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he came out here to Redlands to investigate that Redlands sighting, so I know him quite well. He is very convinced these things are real and probably extraterrestrial.
Now let's examine the facts surrounding the Mississippi incident. Essentially, there were two men, one about 45, the other about 19, who were fishing along the river after work when they turned around and saw a spacecraft landing. It was about 20 feet long, glowing with blue lights. They were amazed. One of them said he would have jumped into the river if he could, but he felt riveted to the spot. Now, as they were watching, a trap door opened, and three of what they called creatures floated out of the object, and according to one of them, floated him on board. There was a number of really bizarre things that they described, which, according to Dr. Harder, if they were trying to fix up a story that they wanted people to believe, they wouldn't have included. There were three other reports of what seemed to be the same UFO that same night, plus another report that came later of a young man who had seen it. A lie detector test indicated the truth, and they passed through hypnosis. They were left alone in a room with a tape recorder that they didn't know was there at the sheriff's office. They continued their conversation between the two of them, and there was no indication that they were laughing up their sleeve. They talked to each other about how no one would believe them, One of them slipped into saying his prayers, and they told each other how they felt about what took place just a few hours before. I talked with Dr. James Harder of UC Berkeley, who investigated the incident. Now, Dr. Harder is from a broad background. He has done research and published papers in such diverse areas as the swimming speeds of dolphins, the design of interplanetary probes, electronic simulators for food control systems, and the computer identification of nonlinear system parameters. As a consulting engineer, he works in the fields of digital computer simulation of large hydraulic systems and the prediction of sediment transport in rivers. His current interest is in bioengineering. He is developing an implantable motor-driven artificial heart. He has been interested in UFO phenomena since 1960 and has been associated since then with the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization of Tucson. Dr. Harder is research director of APRO, and as part of his preparations for field investigations, he has been trained in clinical hypnosis and finds it of invaluable help with those persons who have had such a terrifying experience or who have developed an amnesia that only through hypnosis can they remember their experiences.
Well, concerning the Mississippi case, I suppose that it's so bizarre that people are always looking for some way to try to believe that somehow it could not have happened. I was called into the case in my capacity as director of research for the Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization in Tucson, and also because I've been trained in clinical hypnosis. Now, both of the men, surprisingly, considering their great state of agitation and evident fear, was able to put them into hypnosis, and in one case, that is the case of Hickson, led him partway through a reenactment or a going through the experience in hypnosis, and in the case of the younger man, all the way through, to the extent that I was convinced that they were describing something that was very, very real to them. Now, hypnosis is no royal road to the truth. A person who has made up a story can stick to it and will stick to it under hypnosis. But when he brings to it the absolute terror, that is to say the subjective feelings that went with the experience, you can be sure that he has to be better than most Hollywood actors to pull the thing off and really be convincing. Now, so far as that case was concerned, it was unfortunately somewhat lacking in scientific data that we were looking for, although, of course, when any human being gets kidnapped by something that seems to have come from outer space, it's certainly great news. Hickson, the older of the two men, told me that when they turned around, they saw this object, which he described as oblong, which is probably oblate, about 20 feet wide, glowing bluish, and that when he was floated on board through some kind of an opening that appeared, the room inside was very bare, except that it was just very brightly lit. An object the size of a small football that looked something like an eye, he said, went up and down and around him as if it were taking pictures or x-rays or something like that. No explanation was given to him. He was just floating there, as he described it, and no words were exchanged, a very businesslike operation, he described it as being. And after this was over, which didn't take very long, he was floated back out, put down, whereupon these robots or creatures, whatever you want to call them, got back on board, and it took off at a very rapid pace.
What was your personal hypothesis after investigating the case?
Well, it's, of course, very, very shy of any great detail. I have no doubts whatsoever that they were telling the truth, and particularly that there were two of them and additional witnesses in addition from other parts of town that had seen it. And it's one of the more bizarre cases that have hit the news recently. But so far as being newsworthy in scientific sense, it really wasn't. And of course, what we at APRO are really interested in are finding more and more bits of scientific evidence that can be eventually fitted together into some kind of a better pattern.
Coming out.
Now, among the thousands of other reports on UFOs in this country, we must include the astronaut sightings of Conrad on Gemini 5 and Apollo 11. Borman on Gemini 7 describes a bogey at 10 o'clock high. Collins and Young detected five objects traveling together in orbit on Gemini 10, and McDivitt on Gemini 4, who has photos and films of his sightings.
About 45 degrees. Oh, it's coming like it's really going over.